Hey everyone, welcome to They Teach That, a podcast about film, video, and TV production programs in our schools. I'm your host, Kevin Patterson. So everyone's had those moments where they've seen a film or video, and it's just amazed them so much that they had to tell everyone about it. Well, I had that experience with a short film that was produced by students of today's guest. Jennifer Overtevest has been a high school TV teacher for the past 20 years, spending more than half of that time at West Ranch High School. At the end of 2016, she had a pair of students produce a short film called The Story of Her. If you have not seen The Story of Her, hit pause right now, go to YouTube and search for it. Look for one of the accounts for Skylar Brigman or Connor Williams, and you'll see the short film posted there. When I first saw this film, my reaction was to share it with all the other teachers in my district and encourage them to show it to their students. I shared it with all of my classes. There have been some amazing high school films over the last several years that I've seen, but this one just really stood out to me as being a complete package. Excellent writing, beautiful cinematography, wonderful direction, great acting by the kids, really well scored, just a fantastic product overall. I think it was probably better than nearly every college film I've seen. So I would say that that would probably be a prerequisite viewing before listening to the rest of this episode. Jennifer was the 2014 Student Television Network National Teacher of the Year, but it hasn't always been smooth sailing through her career. Amongst what we discuss in this episode is her realization that she didn't want to continue with a career in production.
And I just remember the chaos and the crazy, and I mean, people calling and I'm answering phones and, you know, the director's scaring me to death because he's just a scary guy. And I just remember going home that night and I was like, oh, I don't think I can do this.
Difficulties she faced when first starting in a classroom.
I had one teacher who was a senior English teacher who her entire class wrote me letters about how bad I was doing and how awful our show was. And I remember crying, going, I can't do this, I'm gonna quit.
And why you don't necessarily need to know everything about the technical tools used to be an effective teacher.
If I had swept in and saved the day for the kids, what would they have learned? Instead, they all learned to like calm down. One kid figured it out, they turned it in, and when they won, it was like the most amazing thing as a teacher.
I think some of what really stood out to me in this conversation is what Jennifer went through in dealing with her own colleagues at times. I can relate to some of what you'll hear about her first year teaching and just how it can really beat you up, how no one else on campus may really have a clue what you're going through. I remember getting complaints from other teachers myself, and it could just really eat away at any confidence you're trying to gain when you're first starting out. So if you find yourself in that boat, I think you'll definitely be able to relate to what you hear today. I think she definitely offers some good insights for students wanting to pursue a career in production after high school. She talks about what factors she had to consider when deciding whether she wanted to continue to work in film and television. Her program, West Ranch High School, is one that she'll hear in conjunction with national awards every year. You know, they had two entries place at the 2018 Student Television Network Convention and another at the STN Nationals. And then, as you'll hear us mention, they had a film from 2016-2017 that won Best Film in the country. So you'll hear us talk about that. So it's a great conversation I think you guys will enjoy. So without further ado, let's get to it. All right, well, I am here with Jennifer Overtevest. Jennifer, how are you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
So, Jennifer, you teach at West Ranch High School, correct, outside of Los Angeles. Tell us, who is Jennifer Overtevest?
That's a loaded question, I think. Most people, when they ask me who am I, I'm a teacher. That's my number one thing, I think. And, well, my number one is mom, and so that's my favorite job. But teacher... I think my favorite thing with teaching and being a teacher is just seeing the kids and see what they do. I love that. And so that's really what it is now. I used to be someone different, I think, back in the day before teaching, but that's what I am now.
All right. How did you find yourself in a classroom? If I did my research, I think you've been teaching for about 20 years, correct?
About 20 years, and I always tell my parents when we get back to school in a couple weeks, I tell the story how I got into teaching because I swore I wouldn't be a teacher. My mom and dad are teachers. My grandma was a teacher. My great-grandma. I'm like, I'm never going to teach. Teachers are awful. No way. So I actually went to school to go into the film business. I wanted to be a director, a producer, and I did a bunch of jobs for about almost four years in the industry. Because, you know, we do live right out. I lived in Northridge, which is only about 20 minutes from Hollywood. And so I worked in Santa Monica. I worked in down in Los Angeles and all these places working in different fields of the industry. So I think I started off doing, I tell the kids, I got paid to sit in a room and watch TV shows for the Emmy Awards. And they always think that's the coolest thing because I made, gosh, at the time, about $600 a week, which kids, that's still pretty good money, watching TV shows. And so that was my first job in the industry, and I loved it. But it was one of those things where I still couldn't find my true passion. And then I ended up working on the Academy Awards, and that was a lot of fun as well, did the same kind of thing. And then I'm like, okay, I think I want to do something else. And so I did sports. So I worked for ABC Sports. I did about five USC football games, USC, whatever. And then I even did the Rose Bowl. And it was the Rose Bowl. It was Penn State versus Oregon State. It's like, I'll never forget it. Because my dad was a football coach, and he had a player on the Oregon State team. So I got to get him on the field watching his player play at a Rose Bowl game. And I was like, this is awesome. Until I realized sports is literally every weekend, every holiday, every time you want to be with your family, it's sports. So then I tell the kids, then I lucked out and I got a internship job, which means making no money. And I was making decent money at the time. And I worked for Joe Wazan, an amazing producer on the movie Kiss the Girls. And I was his assistant. I saw the movie being made from beginning to end. And I hated it. I went home crying. And so it's hard to tell the kids when you think you know what your dream is and then you don't. And the weird thing is now, I mean, I don't think being teaching has been like the best thing because I teach what I love. And so I lucked out. Valencia High School out in Santa Clarita Valley had an opening for a video production teacher. They were kind of the first ones. They wanted to get video going, and that was 20 years ago. And I was the first teacher hired in our valley to teach video production. And so that's how it all kind of started 20 years ago now.
So you went to the school for broadcast or filmmaking. Tell us about your experience through, I guess, your own schooling and through college and getting into the industry at first.
Cal State Northridge is a really cheap school. Well, nothing's cheap nowadays. I've got a daughter who's a senior this year. So I'm freaking out about how we're going to pay for even Cal State systems next year. But it was a relatively inexpensive school, and it's right next to Hollywood, and it's got a great, great reputation for film. So I got into film there and was able to graduate in 4 years, which is unheard of, really. Now, even then it was, especially in, you know, any of them. And I always say, my dad taught me. My dad taught me things happen for a reason. And so I met someone while I was getting out of college who then got me my first job. And then that led to the next, to the next, to the next. And it's just one of those things that's kind of how it all started. And I wanted so bad to make it in the, you know, we live in near Hollywood. I wanted so bad to make it. And I was so fortunate to be able to go and do a lot of things in the industry. And I think in the back of my mind, I always knew I would eventually teach. My goal was to teach hopefully college one day, which I'm starting my second year teaching at our local community college, screenplay writing. So I can get into that later. But it is one of those things where I knew, but I wanted to be one of those teachers who had experience, not just one who went straight from college into the classroom. And so that's kind of how it started. And CSUN was an amazing program, and then did a couple jobs. And then, I don't know, Valencia High School, it was just the timing was perfect. And I ended up getting that job.
Going back to what you had discussed before about the difficulty of working holidays and weekends and production schedules, especially with college football, because college football, particularly around the holidays, you know, you get to New Year's. Like New Year's Day is a huge, huge work day. I guess what I'm kind of curious about is tell us about some of that kind of emotional hardship that you experienced. That's something that I think, that's something that when I was in college, I interned out in Los Angeles. I immediately went into teaching after college, but you know, just even interning, I kind of got the feel for wow, how intensive this can be. It can be a lot of fun and it's a lot of excitement, but it can be kind of emotionally draining and totally throw off a very, you know, if you're looking for a traditional kind of lifestyle, it'll throw that off. Can you tell us a bit about
that? Well, that's kind of what it was for me. I wanted, when I first got into business and I did the Academy Awards, the Emmy Awards, you know, it's post-production, and I thought, I don't want to work with other people's work. Let's try something else. And I love sports. I'm a huge sports TV junkie. you know, tonight, the big first NFL game, I'll watch it. I love watching sports, but I went to work. When I did work, I remember I worked for another amazing, you know, I was assistant production manager. And so he was great. I mean, I was very fortunate to work with some amazing people in the industry, but I would show up at 5 a.m. and this was at the Rose Bowl, which I lived in Northridge, which is about 45 minutes away. Woke up at 5 a.m, got there at 6, and I worked until midnight, went home, turned around. I did that for 5 days straight before we even started filming. When we were actually filming live, that was the probably neatest thing. And I do remember one time we were filming a USC football game, and we were at the Coliseum, and the Coliseum is old as dirt, and the whole power went out. And of course, funny enough, Prime Ticket, which is Fox Sports now. I don't know, obviously you've heard of Fox Sports. Well, it used to be Prime Ticket. Our local one was Prime Ticket. And they're the small, tiny one. I really wanted to work for them because I knew they were kind of the up-and-coming business. But I got into ABC, which is a better company. But you know how smart starting smaller, was, I think, might have been better for me. But they had the funny enough, like Channel 7, that's like one of the biggest ABC, one of our biggest sports companies out here. They're truck went down, and so we had to go into the Prime Ticket truck and use their feed, and the director's in there, and I'm seeing all these TVs, and I'm just amazed at what they could do. And I just remember the chaos and the crazy, and I mean, people calling, and I'm answering phones, and you know, the director's scaring me to death because he's just a scary guy. And I just remember going home that night, and I was like, oh, I don't think I can do this. It's the stress of pleasing everyone around you, and I'm a people pleaser, and I couldn't please anyone, because that's probably the hardest part of this business, is you don't know who you're pleasing, and nobody's going to tell you you're doing a good job. You just have to love what you're doing.
So yeah. And what kind of hits home a little bit is just the fact that, you know, what you're saying, that the 18-hour days, you know, and you're getting very little sleep in between. I don't know if at the Student Television Network convention this past spring, did you go to the super session? With the assistant director, that was one of the big things he told the kids is, look, you know, if you want to work on sets, this is, you got to love this stuff, because it is going to be, you know, 18-hour days, 20-hour days, maybe. Four or five days a week. You know, it's a whole nother ballgame, a whole nother animal from the traditional lifestyle that you're even used to
And I always think that was what's probably hard, because I come from teachers. My parents were teachers. So, you know, my parents had summers off. I always joke, you know, Martin Luther King Day off, you know. And so when I worked in the entertainment industry, it's like, what do you mean? You don't get Martin Luther King Day off, you know. You get no days off. And so that was kind of that was a culture shock for me. And then and definitely working the holidays, you know, New Year's Day in my family is a big holiday. You know, I'm half Japanese, and so we have a big Japanese tradition. But that was one of the first years I didn't spend New Year's Day with my family, because I was at the Rose Bowl. The only fun thing is my dad was with me, because, you know, he ended up coming with me. But I just, the thought of missing every holiday because of this was probably one of the reasons I don't miss it. Like, people go, do you miss it? And I go, no, I love watching sports TV. I don't need to be there.
So kind of transitioning from that, you know, how did you go from that? I should say, what was the transition like going from that into teaching, and you know, what advantages did you find that you had getting into teaching high school, coming out of the industry, and what culture shock did you experience?
Well, when I was thinking of getting out of the industry, like I said, I worked for Joe Wazan, a wonderful producer, and he was such a great mentor, and he was just so good. He was just a nice guy. You hear so many bad stories, and he just wasn't. And I just remember I would go home and cry, because I hated what I was doing. And I just wanted to make a difference. And so I was getting married, about to get married to my husband. We've been together for a while. And my sister-in-law-to-be, she was getting into teaching, or she was teaching. And she's like, you know, why don't you want to be a teacher? And I was like, I don't want to be a teacher. My parents are teachers. And so, you know, literally 3 months before we were getting married, my husband and I got out of the business. And funny enough, I met so many people in the industry, and I swear every person I met was like, you have a degree, get out of the business. You have a bachelor's degree, get out. And I'm like, why? And so it wasn't until that last couple months I understood why. Like, you have to love the crazy hours and I was always on edge, because I'm just one of those people, like, do you like what I'm doing? Do you not? It's just kind of, I don't know, I couldn't read people, and I'm kind of shy. I don't go out of my way to go get to talk to people. You've got to be a networker, and I'm just not comfortable doing a ton of networking. And so that was kind of hard. And so luckily though, my sister-in-law, she got me a 2-month long-term sub job for LA Unified teaching fourth grade, which was probably the worst 2 months ever. But funny enough, I didn't cry a lot, which was funny because I admit it, I hated it so bad. But the teaching, even though it was like, I hated teaching fourth grade and I was not good at it, I kind of already started to see why people like it. You see these kids and you make a difference. And I taught in a really low income area that year. And I just remember a couple kids, I learned so much that year just on being a good teacher, is just listening to kids and making sure that they know they're being listened to, you know? And so then, yeah. And then I lucked out and I interviewed, and I think there was about 18 people that interviewed for the job, and I lucked out and I was the first one hired. And I'm to this day, I'm shocked they hired me because I had really no experience teaching except for having parents who knew. And then they threw me in a classroom and not one piece of curriculum. I didn't have curriculum. I had equipment, but that was it. And I mean, I will tell you, the first day of teaching, I did cry, and I'll tell you that later. And I remember calling my dad saying, I can't do this. And he's like, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. But yeah, that was hard. So I think the transition, it definitely took me a little bit, but it was easier because I think I was ready for a change.
What? So your first year of teaching, you know, you're the first, you said you were the very first teacher in your district, I believe. So you're basically starting something entirely new, which I imagine was kind of scary, but at the same time had to have had the advantage of there weren't really expectations because, hey, this is you're pioneering something new for your area. You know, and so you had no curriculum. Tell us about, you know, what did you, I guess, what advantages did you see in getting to do something entirely new? And you know, what hardships did you have because it was something entirely new, not just for your school, but your entire area?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, the hardships were, I mean, looking at it now, were just a ton, but I was so excited to just teach and just have a full-time job. I mean, I was freelance for so many years and it was that feast or famine, like, you know. And so I'm like, great, I finally have benefits. I never had benefits. So that was kind of all these kind of exciting. I just got married. So we had my husband, he was a teacher too. So I'm like, okay, we have all these fun, you know, we can have time off. But, you know, as a first year teacher, you don't think about that. And then when I started, there was no curriculum. And I just remember literally the first day, I tell this story to people, any new teacher, the first day I had all this planned and I was done with everything I thought was going to take me 55 minutes, took me 10 minutes. And I remember going, what am I going to do for the other 35 minutes? And it was funny because I literally was like, now I'm like, if I got 10 minutes, I know how to fill it. It's just funny how that first year you don't have that skill yet. And then I didn't have curriculum and there's no books. And the positive is, yeah, no, there were no expectations, but there were, in the sense that people in my school, we were the first to have cable in every classroom. And so they already had a live TV show, but I was the first full-time teacher hired. So I think teachers expected more, not knowing I never taught in my life. And then they didn't know there was no curriculum. And so I took a beating my first year. And I mean, I still remember those teachers who, I had one teacher who was a senior English teacher who her entire class wrote me letters at how bad I was doing and how awful our show was. And I remember crying, going, I can't do this. I'm going to quit. And, you know, years later, we ended up winning some awards. And I remember going, oh, I wish this teacher could look at it now. You know, and she was there and I just ignored her. But, you know, some teachers, as you know, especially with what we teach, they're so judgmental because what we do, we put on display every single day. And no one knows what we're doing and what we're dealing with because it's such a different beast than teaching a normal just classroom class. And so that first year was absolutely chaotic and I'm surprised I stayed with it. But looking back now, it was amazing to be able to be the first to start this in the Valley. I'm the first, and so I even got a whole bunch of other schools on board. We now have 6 high schools. All 6 of our high schools have video production now. And I do take a lot of credit with that because I pushed to make sure that everyone had it because it's such a great elective. And I know in 3 years, I think my third year, I had an amazing counselor who pushed me to get the class UC Fine Art credit, you know, so UC schools and it counts as fine art. And so that was a big push and that changed the culture of my class. So we got kids in our classes now who are taking it and it can count as their UC credit. So it's just a different echelon of kids. So we now have AP kids and special ed kids all in the same class, which is, I think, the dynamic that I'm most proud of with what I teach.
That's really interesting that you mentioned how you would get criticism from other teachers, because I experienced that myself my first year, but I also came into a program that had already been in existence for about 15 or 16 years. So, I had the assumption that, you know, I had no idea what had happened before me. And so I was coming in trying to kind of pick up wherever things had been left off and trying to work from there. So, you know, if a teacher tells me, oh yeah, you guys need to fix this, or, you know, or this is bad, or they kind of look down on me upon it. Like, you know, like I kind of had this, I put myself down because I knew there had been something before that, but it's kind of weird that they would, you know, that was your experience your first year, because it was the first year it existed, you know, like I don't know, that just kind of breaks my heart a little bit that was kind of the reaction from, you know, any other teacher. Cause yeah, as you said, what we're presenting is it's a product that's in development. And, you know, if a student in an English class, you know, writes a horrible poem and stands up in front of the class and reads it, the only people who see it or hear that are the fellow classmates and the teacher. You know, it's not put on display for the entire school. It's, as you said, it's very different in that sense. And did you find that any other, you know, as you kind of helped get the other programs set up around your district, was that, you know, an experience that you've heard anyone else, you know, have, as far as like trying to deal with the expectations of
I think because we try to meet, and we've been able to get some of our teachers on board, and so we meet all the time and we talk about how hard it is. I think I've learned after 20 years, the past 2 or 3 years, I've been much better about letting things roll off, because it's in the end, it's like, you know, first year I was so like defensive and like, don't say it. And now when we mess up, I'm the first to like send an email saying, sorry, we messed up. Or, you know, I just think I don't take it as personally. And so I'm fortunate over the years to have worked with so many new teachers, or just new to the video program. Most are English teachers. You know, I'm the only one, I think, in the district. No, the other one. There's a couple of us who have experience in the industry, but most are English teachers now, because I have a vocational credential, and they don't really hire those anymore, which is kind of sad, because my credential, I had to have 5 years of experience in the industry in order to actually get my credential. And I think, I wish they would do that more. And I think that's something that, you know, it's not going to change, because credentials are, you know, it's just getting harder and harder now to actually get one. But it is one of those things where I think we all, when we sit down, we have to learn to just let things slide off. And I do know I was fortunate to find out which people were well respected, and I had people go to bat for me, and they were the one. I had a friend who, she's an assistant principal now, and she's the one who went into it. They wanted to talk about me and my first year in the department chair meeting, and about how bad VTV was at the time. And she's like, hey, she was the one who said, hey, they're the only program that goes on and everyone can judge. You know, no one's judging your lesson, and how many of us teach a lesson first period and second period it's better, and third, and by the end of the day, it's a great lesson. Well, I only get one shot at it, you know, and nobody really sees that. And so I think over the years, having principals, I've had amazing principals the past couple, and they've I think even said that and kind of set the tone with teachers to say, hey, these are kids. This is a product they're doing. I'm a completely hands-off teacher. As you can tell with technology, I'm definitely hands-off. You know, and I can get into that later, but you know, my philosophy is the kids are going to fail, and that's when they learn the most. And so I think that philosophy has gotten around on my school, that I don't hear quite as much of the negative criticism anymore. I mean, I have teachers on my campus to this day who don't turn it on, but there's nothing I can do. And I've learned to maybe challenge my kids more and say, hey, if your viewership is down, let's figure out why. You should want kids to tell that teacher, turn the TV on. You know, and so that is something that we're constantly talking about with my students. You know, I'm trying to turn something negative that I used to get so upset about into something like, I'm too old now. I'm like, forget it. Let's figure it out and move on.
And you guys are a national award winning program. So
we've had some good years.
Going off of your first year experience, how has your program evolved since then? Tell us about the 20-year span, you know, that you've been teaching, and how your program has developed and kind of what it looks like today.
It's completely different than that first year. My first year of teaching, I just remember going, how am I ever going to do this? And I remember I just wanted to go to any conference I could. I wish they had STN back then. I mean, because STN was life-changing for me on my second part of my career. But I mean, that first year is the hardest year. And my dad always, everyone always said, it's like swimming. You're drowning your first year, you know. Second year, maybe you're treading water. In the third year, finally, you're starting to swim. And that's definitely how I was in teaching. And so that first year was definitely a survival year. And I think the biggest problem for me is 20 years ago, there just weren't the resources that there is now. And so I'm actually been working with a lady in my district at Kenyon High School, Ryan Meshkat. She's amazing. And so she's young and she just started teaching over there. So I wish I had, and I'm always like, hey, let's meet. Or she always says, let's meet. I'm like, sure. And I think I'm so willing to meet with her because I wish I had that my first year. And so I think it is something that we're lucky now to have STN and to have all these resources online that we didn't have 20 years ago. And so because of that, I do know I started Valencia High School VTV. I was there for 7 years. It was my first baby. I didn't want to leave it. And then West Ranch High School, my assistant principal, who was a huge supporter of mine, went to go start at West Ranch High School. And they had a studio, a full-blown studio. And he's like, do you want to come? And I said, well, he didn't say it because he couldn't technically recruit me. But he showed me the plans. And I said, absolutely, I want to come. And I think I'm so lucky as a teacher to have been able to kind of take everything I wish I could have done my first year and do it all over again, but better, because I was on my eighth year of teaching. And so just even looking at my first year at West Ranch High School and how it has evolved from there to now is crazy how much, because I'm one of those, I'm like, I get a little bored, a little ADD. I'm like, what can we change up? And so it's so different than what it was when I started West Ranch High School 11 years ago now. I think it was 11 years ago now. We're starting on our 12th year maybe. And so I'm so lucky I had that experience to start a whole new program all over again. And then I think within my second year teaching at West Ranch, I was introduced to STN. And I mean, Nancy knows I'm a total weirdo. I love STN because it just changed the way I taught. And I remember just going, there are teachers who struggle with everything I struggle with. And there are teachers who have resources. And I mean, I've stolen stuff from every high school I can in order to make my program that much better. And programs like Carlsbad, Palos Verdes, Whitney, they just strive to make my kids have a focus and make it more valid what I'm doing. Because I think the biggest thing is everyone says, oh, you teach an elective class. And it's like, no, I'm teaching them life skills. But nobody gets that until they're in my class and they go, oh, I am learning so many more things than just video production.
Absolutely. I my big pitch to my kids is the soft skills that they're going to get out of this. I mean, it's not so much you're taking this class so that you can possibly go into a career in this, because some of them will, but you know, that's not what a majority of them will do. And the big thing is it's going to teach you a lot of soft skills that you're going to get to apply to any career field that you choose, and you're going to get to practice those while doing something cool and fun and unique.
Yeah, or just being a part of something. That's, I think, to me, the biggest thing.
Yeah, you get to make a product that people are going to consume, and that's an important experience in the learning process. So from let's go off of what you were saying, getting involved with STN and how big of an influence that had. So tell us, you know, how you know, what your experiences with STN have been, and how and what specific ways you've seen that develop your program, and more specifically what I'm kind of curious about, because I'm way out here in Florida, you're out there in California with some of the schools that you mentioned. You said Whitney High School. I actually just talked with their teacher the other day, and you've got Carlsbad High School out there, and STN is housed, is headquartered all the way out there in California. You know, specifically, how has it kind of helped you develop a community, not just with, you know, other schools across the country, but even just schools, you know, along the California coast there? You know, how has it helped you kind of connect with schools that are just, you know, a handful of hours away, so that you guys have a community just within your state?
I wish I did more. I don't. I mean, I wish I could go up to Whitney High, but California is huge, just like Florida. It's like 5 or 6 hours away. So, and I don't think I've ever met the teacher. You know, and I always tell people, if I was really good at networking, I would have stayed in the business and I would be a producer. I'm like, when I go to STN, I just kind of stay by myself, and that's my problem. But in the end, I'm there because, like, and I told the kids, I'm like, I'm getting old. I'm like, I don't want to go, but they want to go. And so I'm there for them and the experience for them. But STN itself, is to me just, to me, they're like the godsend I needed at the time. You know, I'd been teaching for 10 years and I think 10 years, that pivotal year of, am I going to keep doing this or not? And, you know, as a woman, as a mom, I'm like, I felt I had to, but how do I change it to make myself? Cause I wasn't really happy. And I just remember I went to STN that first year and I am competitive. You know, I used to be an athlete. So the competitive nature in me came out pretty quickly when I was like, oh, we can try and compete. In our first year, we didn't win anything, but it was a learning year. And Western Ranch High School, we started with only freshmen. So when I went, I had only sophomores. But my show changed 180 degrees that year just from going to STN. And kids started seeing the benefit of doing professional shows and not just doing Jackass shows. Because, you know, I still struggle with Jackass. I hate that show, you know. And so struggling with that was something. And I just remember every year we went, the kids wanted so bad to win. And so I did get caught up in it. We won the first... In 2007, we won the first Sweet 16. And I remember that was probably the best feeling as a teacher I ever had, because it was Sweet 16. And were you there then?
2007, no. I was graduating high school myself in 2007.
Oh, you are a baby. That's right.
I actually submitted a couple of my new shows, actually placed in the STN National, the Spring Nationals competition. But my high school, I didn't even realize there was a convention. That wasn't something my teacher was really aware of. I kind of sought out the contest stuff myself and submitted my stuff. But we weren't even aware there was really a convention. So no, I wasn't there myself.
Yeah, and I don't know if I would have gone, but you know, it was in Disneyland, which is an hour from our place. So it was really easy, it was cheap, we could go. Sweet 16, the first year they did it was Sweet 16, and it was just like Crazy 8, but 16 hours, and it was awful. And it was the first year, though, that I kind of finally saw what STN's about, which is these kids worked for 16 hours, and I tell this story to people all the time. They worked so hard, and I took, I think, like 20 kids, not very many at the time, and they weren't going to get it done. And this was when we had to put on a mini DV tape, and I'm technology savvy. I'm not, like, you know, literally because I came from development, I'm all about, tell me the story. Let's talk about the screenplay. And so I loved helping them with stories. But when it came to the technology, I don't know how to get off the computer and on it. It was so frustrating. And for the last hour from 10 until 10:40, kids are in the hall crying. They'd been working for 15 hours. The project wasn't coming off. And they were like, I'm just thinking, oh my God, 16 hours, these kids are crying, they can't get, but what a great lesson, you know, deadlines, and they obviously wasted time between the hours of 3 to 5, you know, but I'm just thinking as a teacher, how am I going to get these? And I remember I was in the room with Tracy Prisky, my friend, crying, going, they're going to fail, what am I going to do? But also as a teacher, you're thinking about how to flip it, because that's what we're constantly doing, right? How do we flip it, make it a positive? And they somehow got it off the computer with literally 1 minute. We sent Nick Russell. See, these kids I still remember. He ran it down, turned it in with 30 seconds to spare. And they had two categories at the time. It was Sweet 16 for schools like Hillcrest High. They won it was like blue or green division. I think they were blue. And they were programs that were 5 years and older. And since we were only in our first year, technically, or second year, we were in the green division. And we ended up winning the green division. We won. So I just remember when we won, the seeing on their face, that the ownership, because I didn't swoop in and save the day because I didn't know how. But again, I don't know if I would have, because my mantra is, look, I just see that now. And I tell the story all the time to people. If I had swept in and saved the day for the kids, what would they have learned? Instead, they all learned to like calm down. One kid figured it out. They turned it in. And when they won, it was like the most amazing thing as a teacher, because these kids felt such ownership in something. And that's what we're here to do, is give them full ownership as much as they can so they can take that experience to the next part of their life. So that's what STN changed me.
I was there in 2014 when you were named Teacher of the Year here in Orlando.
That was my worst year teaching, by the way.
Well, you know, yeah, that happens. Sometimes the times that on the surface seem like the best are the hardest underneath. But I actually got a chance to talk with you at that convention, and you had told me that that is kind of your philosophy, is that you don't teach the technology, or you don't really emphasize the technology that you believe that the kids will, they'll learn the technology, they'll figure out the technology, they're kind of wired that way, but that, you know, you need to give them the chance to really, you know, explore for themselves, and teach them the storytelling, and they'll kind of figure out themselves, like, really how to do that. You know, so tell us how that philosophy is kind of, you know, what ways that's really helped your program grow.
Well, I definitely think that, I mean, that's why I said I definitely have had my 2011 and 2014 years, or my ups and downs. And I think as teachers, we have to continue to have these up and down years. And a lot of it is just, I was letting kids in. I think I had an assistant principal, wise assistant principal, tell me I was trying so hard to save every kid instead of working on the kids who deserved to really work with. And so I was able, like, now, oh my gosh, I'm so proud of where my program's at, just because I love the kids, and the kids are amazing, and they're such positive kids. And so I just think now when the kids come in, they know it's ownership. I don't write the scripts. I don't film anything. It's a positive and a negative, because I think in those years, especially 2014, kids tried to use that against me as a teacher, you know, and I live in a very affluent area. I have parents that want to fight every battle for their kid, and these parents kind of used it against me instead of seeing that I was letting their kids find ownership and learn how to work through it. They thought it was me being an inept teacher. And so that's why I've had to kind of rethink and restructure over the past couple of years. I am a little more involved in the sense that I'm grading harder. I walk in the studio. I don't just kind of just let the kids do what they want anymore. Stories, I'm all about stories, but it's harder. I don't know about you as a teacher, but past couple of years, I think the kids, I don't know, that it's harder for them to find stories. And they used to come to me with these ideas, and now I literally sent an email yesterday to my producers, and I gave them 10 story ideas. I didn't used to have to do that, but the past 3 or 4 years, I've had to kind of push stories out to them, and I'm hoping now they'll start, when I talk stories, news stories, you know, and push them out to them in hopes that they'll do those stories and find the excitement in them. So, you know, it's kind of been an up and a down over the past couple of years, but yeah, 2014 was one of the worst years teaching, but I also got a bunch of kids out that didn't deserve to be in, and that was kind of a restructuring year, and I think that's why when I submitted my application, I'm like, I've done XYZ, so why not try and get it? And so that's really one of the reasons I turned in the application.
Yeah, talking about kids having difficulty coming up with story ideas, that was something that we had a newspaper teacher at our school, retired a couple of years ago, but the year before she retired, she was noting to me one time, you know, one thing I'm noticing is that they're just not as curious. She said her students just aren't, they're not as curious about things. They're not asking questions and, you know, kind of, you know, wondering about this or that and how that works and why that's happening. You know, is that something that you would agree with? You would say you've observed?
Oh, 100%. 100%. I remember watching stories my students did back then, and they would come to me and they'd be like, I want to do a story on this, because I'm like, why are they, especially I used to get really political kids back in the day. I've got actually one girl, Rachel Jacobs. I still remember her name. She graduated in 2009, and she's a news producer up somewhere in San Francisco. And, you know, she would come to me with these stories, and she graduated in 2009. So that was, you know, 2008 when Barack Obama, you know, his first year, and there was all this controversy. And I think that was the year it was in California, we were gay rights, same sex marriage. So, I mean, and she came in.
The Proposition 8, I think is.
Yes. Yeah. Proposition 8, say no to hate. That's why it was like, no. But then we live in a very, it's not Bible Belt, but there's some, you know, so it was very scary out here, because you had the very people on yes, big time, a lot of churches out here. And then you had those no that are, but kids, I don't know if they're not curious or they don't care. I haven't seen the passion in kids about political stories that I used to have. And I don't know, I mean, except for our governments in a state that I think kids don't want to know. I don't know. It's as a teacher, it's a little scary to think these kids, what are they going to do? Are they not going to care? But they just don't think about the stories because they want to do funny. They want to do Jackass. They want to do YouTube. Like, I always tell kids I hate YouTube because I think it's destroyed what I've been trying to teach over all these years. I'm finally seeing the positive of it, but there's some negatives with it too, because anybody can make a video. But I always tell the kids, you can give me a 20-minute video, but if you give me a 3-minute video with a beginning, an act 1, act 2, act 3, I'm so much more impressed with that than a 20-minute just random video. So that is, I think it's a constant struggle we're always going to have, but I do think kids are definitely not thinking for themselves as much as they used to.
Yeah, I'm going to make a prediction. I think that you're going to see in the coming years more and more kids into politics, or at least a little more curious about politics, just because of how choppy kind of things have gotten after 2016. It's more reality show kind of television. I'm going to guess that probably in a few years we're going to see some kids that are just a little more interested in what's happening in politics.
I hope so. Yeah, I do hope so. We'll see.
Well, transitioning from real life stories, you guys have had some incredible success, particularly in this past year with narrative storytelling. You had a couple short films that I have to say are probably the two best high school short films that I feel like I've ever seen. One that won the Student Television Network's Fall Challenge Award called Queen of Hearts. And then you guys had The Story of Her, produced by two students named Skylar and Connor. And that one for best film in the country. I'll tell you right now, really quick. So, my kids stumbled upon Queen of Hearts before it was named the winner in that challenge. I showed it to my classes. We loved it. Couple of my kids, I think they either subscribed to either Connor or Skylar or something. And so when they finished Story of Her and it was shared on YouTube, we immediately came across it and were just floored by it. I mean, before Christmas, I showed it to all my classes and said, guys, you need to watch this. This is amazing. So it was really entertaining for us being at the Film Excellence Awards. We were sitting there knowing that, okay, this is going to win for best film. How many awards is it going to win? And it was kind of entertaining to see when it was shown, the whole room's reaction, because, me personally, I probably watched that film over a dozen times showing it to students. And so it was kind of funny, we had all in my group kind of seen it and just watching the reaction of the room. But I guess tell us about, the two students, Connor and Skylar, and the work they did. And I don't know if you guys have a specific filmmaking class or if it was just kind of their own specific projects, that was just kind of what they were geared towards. Tell us about the narrative work that they and other students have done in your class.
So I can go back on as far as kind of how I teach filmmaking, because film is my background. I went to CSUN Film School, got my film degree. I went back in 98 to CSUN and got my master's in screenplay writing, worked on a film. I mean, film, I love film and I love good stories. One of my favorite movies to this day is Usual Suspects with Kevin Spacey, because how do you write such an evil character so great, and I love when I watch a movie and I'm shocked at the ending or just the storytelling, and I'm all about film. But in the end, STN has kind of helped me teach broadcast stories, because I think telling the human story is a way to start it and go to that. And so I am the only teacher on my campus. I don't think they'll ever hire a second one. I don't know if I could work with somebody, because it's my thing now. Because we're on the block, we're on the block schedule. So I teach three classes one day, three the next, but they want Western Achievement Day. So I have two Western Achievement classes. And so because of that, I can't, it's so hard because sometimes I feel like I can't do everything. So I basically encourage kids over the years, the first couple of years in Western TV, to tell new stories. And so Skylar, I'm those two kids, Skylar and Connor, I will never have two kids like that again. They're amazing. And they really made it for me this year, because sophomore year, Skylar was one of those kids that we knew was going to be good, but you just never know. I've seen kids as great as Skylar who get a big head and then they drop my class because they're just too good for the program. And he never was like that. He's such a nice kid and he's so humble. And then I have Connor, who's the exact opposite, who I think I threatened to kick out about 20 times in my class over the years, had an ego, didn't work well with others at all. And so it was a dynamic that senior year, I was so scared. Are these two going to do it? Are they going to make it? Are they not? And they ended up teaming up for Queen of Hearts, and that was their first kind of run out of there, and they're both phenomenals. Connor's 4.8 GPA or something. I mean, he's brilliant, but he is really hard to work with. And so Skylar, when Skylar worked with him, Skylar's way easygoing. Everybody kind of likes him. He was on prom court, kind of one of those kids that So you've got two completely different kids. And I guess, like, Skylar always told me, he goes, it was brutal working together, but they had the best outcome, you know? And so they learned to work with each other. And what is it? Skylar, Connor was one of those kids who told me he loved Skylar because Skylar, Connor's a very overwhelming person, and everyone kind of was scared, including myself, of him, because he's so smart. You don't want to get in a conversation because he's going to win. So you almost just have to, like, let him get away with it. But Skylar was the only one that would challenge him. And so when those two would work together, that's when just magic happened. I mean, there are so many other things that they did, but they hated working with each other, but they came up with some of the most amazing things. And so basically in West Ranch TV, kids can choose either path. I give them a choice. And so, you know, you have to make content. The show, to be good, has to have a little of everything. I want news stories. I want PSAs. I want music videos. I want stories. I said, you guys just can create it, but you have to create. It's hard for me to tell a kid, make a news story when they don't love news. So I've learned over the years, let them make it, but, you know, they have to build up to it. They can't make, Skylar would never have made that story of her sophomore year. He wasn't mentally ready for it. So he does credit all those years making a few news stories. He only made about two, maybe three, but he did a bunch of other things. And so that's something that, you know, he did. And so those two, after doing the story of her, I mean, I was just blown away. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't, or not story of her, the Queen of Hearts. And then they showed me, they did the story of her because they both entered for USC Film School. And so they wanted really hard to make something together, and they turned them in separately. And I just remember watching it, and I remember showing it at West Ranch High School on our TV show, and teachers are like, oh my God, I can't believe it. So, you know, if you want to use this snippet for first year teachers, tell them, wait 20 years, you're going to finally get what you wanted. You know, I finally got that pat on the back from a couple teachers who I was, you know, that was, but it's hard for me to take credit because I don't write it, I don't film it, I don't do anything. But I do credit myself with giving the kids a chance to grow in my program and to have such ownership that they can make projects like this. Because there are other programs, especially in our valley, that these kids would never have worked together in and never would have stayed in the program because they worked so well in my program and with me.
Something that I'm kind of curious about is being so close to LA, you know, whether you have students, I would assume that you have, you know, I'm not sure if you'd have just some or maybe a majority of students whose parents, you know, perhaps work in the entertainment industry. And, you know, I'm kind of curious if you find that to be advantageous being so close to Hollywood and basically where the whole filmmaking industry is housed. Or if you find that to be in some way kind of a hurdle in a way to work with at the high school level.
It just depends on the kid, honestly, because I've had kids of parents who are in the industry who are like, oh, my kid's amazing, and then they don't do anything in my class. And so they usually burn out or drop out by the first or second year. Connor was one of the few kids his mom's an extremely successful producer. And his dad does something in the industry too. And again, I struggled with him, but his mom, when I threatened to kick him out a couple times, his mom was like, absolutely, you know, he's got to learn. And, you know, he was one of the few, he wrote me a letter at the end and he's like, if you hadn't pushed me and I hadn't tried to kick him out so many times, he never would have learned how to actually be a good leader and work. But it all depends on the parents because, you know, she also, I try not to ask them for stuff. You know, I didn't ask her to bring in, I guess she worked for Oprah, knew Oprah, but I never met Oprah, never got in. So, you know, it's up to the kids if they want to bring people in. But yeah, I've had parents who work in the industry, their kids come in and then they usually aren't in there very long. So it just kind of depends on the situation. But I think the biggest advantage with working near the industry is that you can, I mean, I've gotten my kids have gotten themselves job shadows and internships on various locations to see, do I like this and do I not like this? And so that's the biggest thing I think that we have that's an advantage over really a lot of other programs, especially in the country.
It's a shame you didn't get Oprah and your whole class could have gotten a car.
Connor didn't even tell me until like a month before he graduated. I'm like, what do you mean your mom works with Oprah? And he's like, I never told you that. And I'm like, no. He goes, oh, you're probably trying to kick me out. I said, yeah, probably.
So I know my students have looked at a couple of the different videos that I don't know if it, you know, exactly who from your class would have made them, but they've looked at a couple different projects from your guys' class. I think it was your prom video. We watched the prom highlights and thought, wow, that's great photography. That just looks really nice. You know, how is it to teachers that are, you know, really struggling to kind of, you know, help get their students to master the technical expertise? I know that's something that you said that, you know, you believe the students will kind of figure that out. How do you really, you know, help get your students to push your students to, you really study what it is they need to do technically to make their work stand out and get them to achieve the type of product that you want to see out of them?
I think over the years, especially the past 3 to 4 years for me, it's been all about the students setting the bar. My students have raised the bar of year. Connor and Skylar have raised the bar immensely this year. And so the kid who you watched was actually Max and Joel, and they're both sophomores. They're now juniors this year. And so those two kids like just idolized Skylar, and we're like, and Skylar is just a different beast of a kid I will never get. I mean, this kid, he wanted so bad to win that he passed out the first day at STN because of the stress he put himself on. We had to have an ambulance come into our room, and he passed out, like literally he just, because it was his last STN, he wanted to win something he'd never won. And so he spent the entire year, and that's something where I always tell kids, if you want to do well at STN, and that's so hard as a teacher, because you want kids to win, but there's 3,000 kids. And honestly, what I like isn't what you like, and what the judge likes is totally different. So like, how do you teach a kid too? I always say I have my mom goggles on. I love everything my kids make until I see what other schools are doing, and I say, oh yeah, that's why, you know? So I think it's one of those things where the kids have really said it. And so Skylar had meetings every single day in my room at lunch with his film crew for the Crazy 8 film. And you know, he ended up placing third place, and his team was in there every day at lunch. We're talking probably for the first semester. And so he was working with Joel and Max, who are both sophomores. And so as much as I want to take the credit, it's not, because the kids want to improve. And so Skylar was a sophomore, and he had Noah was my senior, who's actually, I think he's at Columbia University. He wants to be a producer. And he was one of those kids who helped kind of get the riffraff out. And we had to realize you have to make a good show that you like, not what the 2,500 students like. And so I really credit the kids and getting and telling, you know, any first year teacher, tell them, get good kids in there. Don't get your jackass kids in there just because that's who they want to see on TV. Because I don't have the most popular kids in my class, but I've got talented, amazing, great kids. And this year we brought in a bunch of sophomores, freshmen now sophomores, that are just probably the most socially awkward kids, but man, are they talented, you know? And that's what's going to do well over the years, and that's what's going to make our program hopefully get better, is having those kids in there. And so it really is, get good kids in there who are really there to make a good product. And I mean, Skylar and Connor really gave up so much of their own time because they wanted to win so bad, which is why I love STN, because it gives these kids a purpose. But then when they don't win, it's so hard to like tell them it's okay. You know, and so they've learned that. But yeah, no, I mean, this year, I've got Christian and Josh, and they say they're going to make videos, but you know, they are coming after Skylar and Connor, which is really hard. But had you asked me this time last year, if I thought Skylar and Connor were going to do what they did, I would have said absolutely not, because they were so disjointed, and I was just, they're nice kids, but I didn't know how they would work together. And so I think as a teacher, that is probably the most rewarding thing for me, to see these kids who, that is the most rewarding thing, is seeing these kids who normally wouldn't be friends. Like Skylar and Connor, if they were not in my class, would never be friends. These kids are lifelong friends now. And that's what I think I love the most, is just the relationships that are created in my classroom.
With Skylar and Connor kind of going off to college and you know, possibly going off into the film industry, I'm kind of curious, since you've been in the classroom for 20 years, you know, what have you heard back from students that you've had in the past, as far as, you know, how, what they've learned in your classroom that's really helped them develop in their career, whether it be a career in the entertainment industry or anything else?
I mean, since I've been teaching 20 years, I've got a bunch of kids. Some are now with Facebook, we can connect with them again, you know, and some of them are, I've got a kid who's, when I say a kid, he's 35 now, you know, he's an independent producer. And so, I mean, he's another kid who I knew at Valencia was going to be something, and he was. And so he just being a part of, I think a lot of these kids, they're not necessarily on a sport. They're not necessarily like being in Western Ranch TV and VTV at the time defines them. And I think that's something that I'm so proud of. And they take what that is to be a part of something. And then they take that on into their career, whatever it is, their choices, whatever they do. And so, I mean, a lot of my kids in 2008, very few went into the business. I think maybe out of the 22 kids that were in my program, maybe one or two went in the business. But funny enough, they are all, probably 10 of them are all still good friends. And so I think that's what most of them take out of the program. But I mean, being as we are near LA, a lot have gotten in the business, and that is kind of fun. Not a lot, but you know, a small amount.
But probably more than most schools, I would imagine.
Oh, absolutely. More than probably the Midwest, sadly, you know? So yeah, absolutely.
Any, plugs that you want to make as far as how people can, check out your students' work or your program? I know you guys have a website. I think it's West Ranch Television, correct?
Yes, WestRanchTelevision.com. I'm hoping to change it to WestRanchTV.com, but for now, West Ranch Television, that's where we house all of our content for free on YouTube. It's just the best. And we have a YouTube channel that's connected to that WestRanchTelevision.com.
Aside from STN, any other resources that you recommend to teachers, both new teachers and veterans?
Oh, gosh, STN. I'm such an STN junkie. I do use funny enough YouTube more now. What is his name? D4 Darius or Darius. I use him a ton. And so he's a really fun, hip YouTube guy that I use in my classroom, mainly when I'm teaching, cause I'm teaching screenplay writing at the local junior college. Cause he's an independent filmmaker, but I have used his for the kids, you know, and he really helps break down movies. And so he's good. There's so much on the internet now, any resources to get the kids to tell good stories is for me what I struggle with, but also what I'm proud of when they do tell a good story. It's all about telling a good story. And now I wish I could go back to school and do journalism now, because there's so much. I mean, I love these documentaries now. I mean, there's the documentaries I love now that are coming out that you can watch. And I'm like, the way they tell stories, documentary style, is so different than when I was way back in their age. So I just wish and I hope these kids get excited and interested and more curious about telling stories, human stories. That's kind of where I'm hoping this year they go.
Awesome. And then the final question I ask everybody. So when we get asked, what do we do for a living? And our answer is, oh, we teach high school TV production, or high school filmmaking, high school broadcast, however we choose to answer that. What reaction do you get from people when you answer that question?
It really varies, especially in this valley. I think the past few years have been, I feel I struggle with, because when I say, oh, I teach video production, most are like, oh, because we are, and this is my big push, we live in such an, I don't know about you, but AP, everything is AP, advanced placement. Every kid's going to college. Every kid should take AP classes. And they don't see the value in having fun and taking an elective where they're going to learn more than just the AP content. They're learning life skills, how to work with others, how to hit deadlines, how to just be a part of a team. And so I'm sad over the 20 years that's kind of where the push is. But you know, and then I get other people who I say, oh, I teach video production. And they're like, oh my gosh, but you must have so much fun. And I'm like, yeah, I honestly, especially this past year, I mean, I cried when my students left, cause it was probably one of the closest knit group of, I had about 10-11 kids who were with me for 4 years straight. And I haven't had that in a long time, because so many kids are AP, 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 AP. And so having this group of kids was the first year that I really felt, okay, kids are mainly finally starting. And all 10 of those went to film school of some sort. Now, I don't know if they'll all stay with it, but you know, to have that unique opportunity for them to be a part of that is finally, maybe people are seeing it. But I just wish I could, you know, I think when it's sad, but I think when people say, oh, I'm an English teacher, they're like, oh, it's, I feel like they get a little more prestigious than when you say you're an elective teacher. But I don't know. It just depends on the person.
Well, all right. So a bonus question going off of that, then, do you guys do industry certification?
Yes.
So do you find that gives a little more prestige to your program? Because I feel like for us, it definitely has added some value, because, you know, it helps fund our programs, helps provide funding for the schools. You know, and it's something that kids who, you know, whether they're going to college or not, something that, that kids can earn. And it, and for us in Florida, you know, I'm not as familiar with the California school system, but in Florida, we're assigned school grades. So it actually helps our school grade getting industry certifications. So I know that's kind of a big push. Do you, has that kind of helped the perception a little bit?
Well, I used to be a career path advisor. I still am, but now it's called CTE, career technical education. Is that, I think it's nationwide. It's the problem with our CTE is a lot of them still want to push more the science CTE. So engineering at my school is the big push. Every kid wants to be in the engineering career path because every kid's going to be an engineer. And so, I think that's kind of, it is better in some aspects. I definitely think that's what I struggled with probably in the years 2011 to 14 is like literally every kid would take AP classes until senior year. I can't tell you how many kids would come in my program senior year in my 1A class and be amazing, making these amazing films and say, yeah, I want to go in the industry. And I'm like, why didn't you take my class? And they're like, oh, because I had to take this, this, and this. And so we are CTE. It helps me with the funding, absolutely. I have a new TriCaster coming, which I'm so excited. But as far as it's the parents in our community. And the parents in our community, we do have a really great director at our district level, Dr. Doyle, who's really supportive of all career technical education. And I think she's realizing in our valley, because Santa Clarita, we're a suburb, and it's we're kind of a mini OC, I call it. It's kind of Orange County, where it's a little gossipy out here, and everyone wants to one up everybody else. And it's not until we get the parents to buy in on the importance of getting these kids in a career that we'll start seeing the trickle down effect. And so, you know, in 20 years, I had kids who took 5 periods of video, and now I'm lucky if I can keep them for 1 just because they're taking 4 years math and science. Our district pushed last year, every kid has to take 3 years math. My son's a freshman, he will have to take 3 years math. Now, my daughter's taking, she's a senior, 4 years math, so they're taking it, but now we're forcing every kid, even the kid who isn't going to college, is gonna have to take 3 years math, which means that's one less elective class he's taking. And so, I don't know, until the colleges, it's the trickle down from the colleges, until the colleges start valuing what we do, I just don't know if it's gonna help. So, but I'm always hopeful, and I do agree CTE does help, at least give it some validity.
I've always believed in the value of electives, even when I was in high school, and I was a I graduated salutatorian of my high school class, so I was very much like conscious of my GPA and AP classes. Now there weren't as many AP offerings as what there are now; it's a little more crazy now. But you know, like I always kind of, even since then, I've kind of viewed electives as kind of the fruit to the core curriculum. You know, the core curriculum gives you a foundation, kind of, you know, works different aspects of your thinking and your development. But, you know, elective education is really the chance to put things into practice and to, you know, have kind of a real life application to certain things. Even arts that, you know, you're not likely to go into, you know, a career in like theater and music, you know, those are things that are going to exercise certain skills.
Oh my gosh. Just knowing how to perform and knowing how to be in front of people. Absolutely.
Yeah. So with that being said, Jennifer, thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. And, you know, hope that you get off to a good start, to your school year. At the time that we're recording this, we're both just starting planning week. And I'm hoping that's off to a good start for you.
I'm hoping next week. Yes, we'll see.
All right. So good luck as you start your school year. And, we look forward to eventually seeing you in Nashville, Tennessee in the spring.
I should be there. We'll see. I keep trying to talk my kids out of it, but they want to go.
And that was my conversation with Jennifer Overtovest. We actually did get a chance to chat right after the 2018 convention in Nashville. We actually crossed paths in the airport and ended up chatting for a while right in the middle of the terminal walkway, just talking about the convention and just kind of our observations about some of the different videos that had won awards. And just kind of talk for a while as we were both waiting around before boarding. So it's just kind of a good example of when you get TV teachers together, sometimes it's all too easy for us to get carried away in a lengthy conversation. So that interview was my last from 2017. Next week, I'll actually have a 2018 interview to share with you all. My guest will be my first teacher from here in Florida, Omar Delgado from Christopher Columbus High School, which is a school that you've likely heard mentioned before. If you missed the episode posted at the beginning of this week, go back and check it out. It's just one back in your feed. It's with one of my best friends, and it's a little more of a personal conversation, and it was a chance for me to practice what I wanted to do for this podcast. But the conversation was full of some great insight. So if you missed it, give it a listen. I do think it's worthwhile. If you have any suggestions for what you'd like to hear on this podcast, please let me know. Any ideas that you may have, or just any knowledge that you'd like to hear from your colleagues, you can email me at theyteachthat@gmail.com. If you know of a teacher or student alum that you'd specifically like to hear as a guest, I'd love to hear your suggestion. I do have some ideas of people that I'm going to be reaching out to, but there are definitely numerous people out there that you know, do what we do who I don't know, and who you guys might know. And so if you have a suggestion, or just any thoughts, any comments whatsoever, just feel free to email theyteachthat@gmail.com. I may not be able to address suggestions immediately, but it'll definitely give me some ideas on what you all want to hear and some ideas of what I can plan for the next month or two. So I'm going to aim down the road to actually do some episodes about specific topics and not just interview one individual at a time. So eventually you'll hear some episodes that'll be structured a bit differently and kind of focus a bit more on a certain topic and maybe have different people talk to that topic. I do want to ask you guys to please rate and review this podcast on Apple Podcasts. It makes it a little more likely for people to stumble upon it if it's got some ratings, and specifically some 5-star ratings. Share it directly with your colleagues at other schools. I know that, you know, we all know teachers either in our own district or maybe a nearby district who may be a little more isolated. You might know a teacher that's brand new who maybe just, you know, finished up their first year or is maybe just getting started and about to, you know, is preparing for their first year, and they're trying to figure things out. Go ahead and send them a link to this show and encourage them to give it a listen. I realized this week that there are some people that I hadn't yet thought to share this podcast with, and people who I've known for years, and it just hadn't occurred to me yet to send them an email. And so I'm probably going to be doing that myself. My goal in recording these conversations is to make it a resource that can be helpful to everyone. So think of maybe two people that you know of who teach at another school or teach, you know, somewhere nearby in your region, and share this podcast with them if you think that they'll find it helpful. All right, so that's it for this week's episode. At the time of this posting, it is National Flip-Flop Day, which is a day that Tropical Smoothie celebrates. So I'm about to head out and get myself a free smoothie at Tropical Smoothie. It's just one of those things my wife and I like to do every summer. If you can believe it, we're halfway through June. Get outside and enjoy your summer while you can. Do what you can do now that you know you don't have time to do during the year, and enjoy what you have with your summer vacation. And I'll be back in your guys' feed next week.